So we are going to spend, this is my goal, two more days on the question of Ochel Nefesh. Whoa. Don't calm down. One on this day, Sugya. Okay. Tomorrow we're gonna jump for it one day and one day only to Vav Amud Aleph. Not far. We're just going to turning the page. Yes, because on Vav Amud Aleph we have, remember, according to Tosfot, as we saw, our Gemara is saying that Rabbi Kiva doesn't hold of Mitoch, which aligns Rabbi Kiva with who? Beit Shammai. Right? And then we spend time trying to figure out, maybe no, maybe this is even according to Beit Hillel. However, on, it's clear that our Gemara, the position that forbids burning of Chametz on Pesach is dependent on three positions of Rabbi Kiva, right? Whatever those three are. Yes?
Yeah.
Yes, we spent much time trying to figure out what these three positions are. The problem is that when you turn the page to Vav Amud Aleph, so I know I said 2 days, but literally, what I really mean is today we're doing one sugya, tomorrow we're doing another, but they are sort of related. On the Vav Amud Aleph, the Gemara, as you're going to see, is going to deal with the question, what happens if Avi goes to bed on Pesach, and as he puts his head in his pillow, he feels a crinkle, and he says, there's stale Oreos, right? So what do you do? Now, what does the Gemara say, as you'll see tomorrow? You cover it with a kli, and you burn it on Chol HaMoed, presumably. Just a vessel, something.
Do I do the double?
You cover it. You cover it. Now, you tell me, and after this, I will leave it, and you will see this tomorrow. But you tell me, what's the problem with the sugya? Let's say, according to Tosfot, what's the problem with the sugya?
It's still there.
No. Burn it! According to Tosfot, the position that says don't burn it depends on Beit Shammai. But we paskin like Beit Hillel. So why is it that you turn one amud, and it seems that we forgot? We don't paskin like Rabbi Kiva, according to Tosfot. And we say, cover it, don't burn it. So that's what we're going to do tomorrow, is the second sugya, which is, what do you do lima'aseh if you find chametz in your house on Pesach? But no, I promised that we would finish this sugya today, and we will. Tomorrow, I was going to continue on Haman Bet, but then I realized, wait a second, really we should turn the page. Do the question of what we actually do, not what Rabbi Kiva holds, but what we actually do. Which is, and it's not like I'm skipping 100 plot. Like, we would get to it in like 3-4 days anyways, or, you know, however long it takes us to do an amud, so a month, or whatever. I don't know, whatever. I'm trying to move faster, because I would like to, I don't know if by Hanukkah, but either right before or right after Hanukkah, get to Daf Zayin Daf Chet, do the Over Lasiyatim, and then decide whether we continue the first parak or skip to whatever you guys want. I don't know. Second parak can do, you know, martyrdom like Bryce Clarshear, or fourth parak can do Minag, or tenth parak can do Kviyat Suda, or Kudshim, or I don't know, or the Issur of smell and things, I don't know. Yes, scent. Smelling chametz. Like smelling chametz, or other Issurim. See, it's an interesting sugya, and it was the subject of a huge shaila I got last year from Gafi.
Oh, right.
Fun times. No, so that was... how often do you get real smell shaylas? But I got a real smell shayla because he was in culinary school, and he's like, can I go to class on Pesach? I'm like, oh, now this is a sugya. This is a sugya. Oh, this is amazing. I spent hours on this shayla discussing with various poskim, consulting with them. We had so much fun. I called Rai Bednar. She's like, oh, finally a shayla that I don't normally get. So much fun. Anyways.
What was the answer?
It took forever. Not now. Maybe if we do the sugya, we'll do it.
Could you go to class?
What?
Could you go to class?
Maybe we'll do the sugya, and then you'll help me answer the shayla for him. Yeah, I did answer it. No, because I haven't done the sugya, and then I'd be cheating. So, fine. Okay, but in the meantime, so we said, to remind you where we were yesterday. So, our Gemara, not the one in Daf Hey, right? Not the one in Vavav, not the one we're going to see tomorrow. Our Gemara is within the position of Rabbi Kiva. According to Rabbi Kiva, you are not allowed, right? We know that Bir Chametz must be done on Erev Pesach, and from that we derive three things. That you can't do it on Pesach because, one, it's a malacha, and not a lav. And we dealt with that sugi extensively. Why does that matter? Two, is that he holds the Rabbi Huda that you need to burn it. Yes? And three, that he doesn't hold of Mitoch. Now we said, what does that mean, he doesn't hold of Mitoch? So we said, well, first of all, you got to go to the beginning. What allows us to do malacha, certain malachot on Yom Tov? Ochel Nefesh. What is the nature of Ochel Nefesh? One possibility is Dichuya. Is the Isser is held in abeyance, but is pushed aside, let's say, for Simchat Yom Tov, or whatever reason, but fine. We will allow Mordechai and the Shabbos Aryeh to have the day and say it's Simchat Yom Tov. Not a bad person to be lined up with the Shabbos Aryeh. The Shabbos Aryeh, for the record, was the Posek in Vilna when the Gra lived there, right? Like, the Gra didn't act as the Posek. Shabbos Aryeh was a very important person. Or was he Balabas and also has a Posek? I don't remember. Anyways, so Shabbos Aryeh suggests him with Yom Tov. Second possibility is Hutra. Third possibility, based on the Ramban, is even more strong, is even stronger, is the Lonemra, right? Is that on Yom Tov, on Shabbos, Malachas Asr, and Yom Tov, Malachan Avoda is Asr. Now, we said a possible expression of that would be the Machloket Behil Meshamai, where Behil Meshamai and Beit Sadaf Yudbet argue about Mitoch. Do we say that Mitoch, which literally just means since, okay? Yes, mitoch shehutra letzorech ochel nefesh, since it's permitted to cook, to burn, whatever, for the purpose of food production. Hutranami shelo lezarech, it's permitted to do it, not for food production. Beit Hillel says, yes. Beit Shammai says, no. The problem is, wait a second, our Gemara Rabbi Kiva is lined up with the position against mitoch. So one possibility is that, yes, Rabbi Kiva holds like Beit Shammai, not a problem. Second possibility was to say, wait a second. What? No, God forbid. Rabbi Kiva is basically Moshe Rabbeinu. Well, according to the Gemara, he's greater than Moshe Rabbeinu, right? The Gemara is obsessed with Rabbi Kiva. Second possibility is that this goes back to Machloket in general between Rashi and Tosfot, where Rashi says that Mitoch, once you say that it's Mutter for no reason whatsoever. According to Tosfot, you need Torech Ktzat. You need some need to justify it, maybe because we're expanding the idea of what ochel is, who knows? We said according to Tosfot, so maybe you'd say, well, this is not tzorech. The problem is, it is tzorech, because, you know, so the Maran Chalava, which we'll come back to again tomorrow, says, no, tzorech needs to be for your needs, and this is not for your needs, it's for a mitzvah, doesn't count. The problem is that all the other examples in the Mishnah are mitzvot, therefore you would say, well, that can't be. Which is why Tosfot assumes that this must be according to Beit Shammai, right? So you could say, no, maybe it's a mitzvah, but it's a mitzvah yesterday. That was the Ritva, right? Okay. But what we're up to is maybe. It's worse than that, right? No. We do hold of Ochel Nefesh, and we hold of Mitoch, and maybe we even hold that Lezarech Mitzvah under some circumstances is a reason to be made kill. However, once in a while, Mitzvot makes them worse. Once in a while makes it worse. And we saw that this is in the context of Ochel Nefesh. When Ochel Nefesh, we say it's mutter for you to cook for yourself, for a Jew, but Lachem v'lo la'akum, lachem v'lo la'gavawa. You can't cook for a non-Jew, and you can't cook for the Beit HaMikdash, according to some shita, as we will see. Now, the problem is, how could that be? So if it's duchuya, if it's that the Isser is held in abeyance, so it makes a lot of sense. But if the Isser isn't held in abeyance, it's written off, it doesn't exist, so how could it be that it's also for me to cook for a non-Jew? So here, you have to start saying that no, the fact that you're doing it for a non-Jew, or you're doing it for a gavawa, or the Gemara's other examples, you're doing it for tomorrow, you're doing it for chol. All these things create a new isser, right? So it could be that in our case, destruction of chametz is actually uniquely problematic, specifically because of the mitzvah component, right? And that's what we want to explore, albeit briefly. So the locus classicus for this is the Gemara in Beit Zedavutet. Possibly Doraita, possibly Derabanan, we'll see. So the Gemara in Beit Sadaf Yotet tells us, Beit Shammai Omri Mevi'in Shlamim Ve'in Somcher Aleihem. Beit Shammai says, you can bring Shlamim. What are Shlamim? Binyamin, what are Shlamim? Do you need tea or coffee? Would you like? I have plenty. I could give you green tea with mint. I could give you Rubios with vanilla. I do. I have Rubio's vanilla at my makom. I got it at Yenoda Bitan for $6.90 for a box of 25. They were on sale. Yeah, good price. I bought a few boxes. That's why I was sitting by my makom. Like, only one of the vanilla. Anyways, not important. But if you would like tea, you can take, okay? If that will wake you up, you are free to take a bag of tea. That's very important. What? It is very important. I went, yeah, for the winter, it's good to stock up. Then I don't have to bring from home if I just keep three boxes at my makom. So what are shlamim? Shlamim are peace offerings. What are peace offerings? Mm-hmm. What is unique to shlamim for our purposes?
Well, I know they're a peace offering. I didn't know.
What? So some of them are, not all, some are obligatory, but many shlamim are not obligatory. That's correct. And what else is unique about shlamim? You eat them. Right? Part of them are eaten. Right? By the bailim, by the owners, right? So Beit Shammai says you can bring shlamim on Yom Tov and Som Chalalem. You don't do smicha. What's smicha? Leaning. Not touching. Leaning. Leaning. It's very important. The Gemara distinguishes between this. No. The Gemara distinguishes because it says the whole point is that the reason there might be a problem for women who are not obligated to do smicha is because smicha is called kocho. You do it with all your strength, and therefore if you're not supposed to do smicha, you're leaning on the animal and you're using the animal. So the Gemara makes a big deal of the fact that smicha is not touching, but leaning, right? And therefore, what permits you to use the animal, because you're literally putting its weight on it. No, I'm being precise here only because Gemara is nitpicky about this. Avalo olot. But you can't bring olot. You can't bring burnt offerings. Uvid hil omrem, the inshlamim vi olot visom chanalem. You can bring both karbanot and do smicha. So Amar Ula says, machloket bishalmei chagigo lismoch. Their machloket is about the shlamim that are brought for the holiday, which everyone agrees you can bring. Why does everyone agree you can bring? Because it's for the holiday. So when else are you going to bring it? Their machloket is whether you can do smicha. Beit Shammai says no. Beit Hillel says yes. The ulat ri'iya, but the ola of the Yom Tov. Now you would say, ola of Yom Tov. Obviously you should be allowed to bring that. Why should you be allowed to bring the ola of? What's olat ri'iya? What does ri'iya mean? Ri'iya is to see. Why is it called ri'iya? Because the pasuk says, "V'lo yira'ef anai rekam." That when you turn up to the Beit HaMikdash, you cannot turn up empty-handed. But we don't say turn up. We say lo yira'ef anai. You shall not be seen by my face empty-handed. Meaning, you have to bring a carbon, and that carbon is a burnt offering, which is totally burnt, which means you don't eat it. Now, you would tell me, can you bring an ola of Yom Tov on Yom Tov? You would think yes. Now, wouldn't you, right? Because, you know, it's an ola of Yom Tov. Beit Shammai, according to Ula, says, no. No, you cannot. Bring it tomorrow on Chol HaMoed, but do not bring it on the first day. Why? How could that be? To Beit Shammai Savri, because Beit Shammai says, celebrate is a holiday for God. Chagiga, the chagiga offering, meaning the one you eat, in can be brought ulat ri'ya lo. Ulat ri'ya you cannot bring. Uvid hil savri, and Reis Hill says no. La Hashem, for God, kol. Dila Hashem. Anything for God can be brought. Aval nidarim unidavot. But voluntary offerings, divei hakrol, ain craven b'yom tov. Everyone agrees you cannot bring voluntary karbanot. V'chein amar Rav Ada bar Ava, nidarim unidavot, ain craven b'yom tov. And that's what Rav Ada bar Ava said, voluntary karbanot you cannot bring. So now, this is a huge sugya, but I want to get the basic contours of it down, okay? So you tell me, why, according to this position of the Gemara, voluntary karbanot, including ones that you eat, everyone agrees, in this stage in the Gemara, you are not allowed to bring it on Yom Tov. Why? Aren't you eating it?
You are.
Nidarim, right? According to this stage in the Gemara, I know this is confusing, okay? So according to this stage in the Gemara, if you get a marker, I could write it, but... So according to this Gemara, let's go through the three, okay? We have an Ola, Olat Riya. According to that, Beit Hillel says, mutter, because it's meant to be brought on Yom Tov. It's for God. You're allowed to do things for God on Yom Tov. Beit Shammai says, this is the carbon you're supposed to bring on Yom Tov. That's very nice. Too bad. Too bad, because according to Beit Shammai, what is he at this stage assuming about Ochel Nefesh? Lochem, and not for God. Right? Not for God, period. Right? Shlomim, that you must bring on Yom Tov. So now they have two things working in your favor. What's working in your favor? They're meant to be brought on Yom Tov. That's what you meant, right? and you're allowed to eat it. Which means you're supposed to bring it on Yom Tov and you're eating it, so there's a kiyum of Ohal Nefesh. And therefore everybody agrees you can bring it. The question is smicha.
So
right? Yes?
Right.
And but voluntary edible karbanot, according to this day in the Gemara, everyone says you can't bring it.
Whoa.
Not
why not?
Not
what? Oh, good. So here is where many of the Mepharshim say it's true. It's true that you happen to eat it. That you happen to eat it. No, you do have to eat it. It's even a mitzvah. But it's a karban. And it's not defined as for you. What is it defined as? For God. And therefore, potentially, the fact that you bring it for God, the fact that you eat it is very nice. It's even a mitzvah. But how does the Gemara phrase it elsewhere? Good. Mishulchan gavoa kazachu. That when you eat it, you are getting it from God's table. So some of the Mepharshim say, what does that tell you? Right? And again, this emerges from the Gemara, but I didn't want to really, I want you just to understand how to think with this. Wait one second. So you'd say, well, that's crazy. Right? That's crazy. I can't bring it, but I'm going to eat it. Right? And the answer is, it's not enough that you eat it. What is what has to happen? The act of shechita and hakrava has to be defined as ochel nefesh. Now, what does that show you? According to this day in the Gemara. No. According to this day in the Gemara, the only type of karban you can bring is an ola, according to Beit Hillel, but only because of a special gzerat katuf, right? A chagiga, why? Because there's two factors. One is that you're eating it, and the second is that it also has to be brought today. So the combination of facts makes it butter. But within Beit Hillel, yes, right? But according to this day in the Gemara, everyone agrees that in Dharma and Dava, you can't pray. But why not? You're going to eat it. So the answer is almost inevitably, sometimes it's not enough that you happen to eat it. It's that either the act needs to be defined as for eating, or to put it differently, one way, either it's the act positively needs to be defined as eating, or alternatively, the act can't actively be defined as for something else, for God, right? And the only reason that you can bring an Ola is because we had a separate Pasuk, right? That says, L'Hashem, and even that, does Beit Shammai agree? No, Beit Shammai denies the Gzeirat HaKatuv, which means that Beit Shammai denies you can bring something for God. Beit Hillel says you can bring it, but only because I have a special Pasuk. And in Dharma Nidavot, even though you end up eating it, the very fact that it's being brought for God, according to this day in the Gemara, makes it worse according to everybody, right? Mm-hmm. Yes?
Yeah.
Yes? Are we clear on that? Right? So again, there's a lot more that could go on the sugya, but I'm just pointing out that the basic contours of the sugya tells you that it's possible, either because of the Eitan's first formulation, which is, it might be that it's not enough that you happen to eat, but that the acts that you do must be defined as L'shem Ohel Nefesh. Alternatively, they can't be actively defined as something else, and you know, not many things can overpower Ohel Nefesh, but it being for God can, right? Because, you know, God. That shows you that sometimes the fact that a mitzvah is involved actually makes things worse, right? Because it removes, right? Ohel Nefesh. Right now, I know that, I understand that the Mishnah and Beitza that we saw before says that you're allowed to carry a lulav, right? Which makes it sound like that makes it better. But it's undeniable that in this Gemara, the fact that God is involved makes it worse. Right, it makes it worse. Oh, yes, Mordechai.
So,
really, would you like to go to my mock? I'm going to take one if that'll help you. Just wake up. You're like falling asleep. Coffee.
I was
tea.
First class.
Okay.
So then.
It's good tea. Vanilla is good. Anyway, minimal. I mean, green tea doesn't have a lot.
There's black tea right there.
There's black tea there if you like that, yes.
So I don't. Understand
them. Or you could have them.
We're working with
God.
That logic that
yes.
How we can just poo-poo that by Chagiga when you just say.
Right, so Chagiga, so the problem is.
You say that they're both factors. I mean,
correct.
They don't really work in
tandem. No, so I understand this is a huge sugya, and I'm not giving everything, but you're right. Meaning, look, in general, what you have to understand is that Bismano is a big deal in Karbana. Right, so for example, Tamid. The Karban Tamid is brought every day, including Shabbat. Why? Because it's mano. Any carbon that, right? So I know you're saying they don't work in tandem. It's true. They're working on different planes. But the fact is that when a carbon is meant to be brought on a particular day, that is a super important factor, such that, like, when it comes to the tummy, that violates even Shabbat.
But it's...
Right? I understand they're not working in tandem, but... and that's why I'm not going...
It's not a
suffix. The Gemara says everyone agrees you can bring the Chagiga at this stage in the Gemara. The Chagiga.
Right.
Because there's two factors, right? Now, you could be more lumdish. You could say, I understand. I'm presenting it as two separate factors. One is it's mono, you, two, you eat. And then you'll tell me, but wait a second, we just said by Nedarim and Nedavot, the fact that you happen to eat doesn't help. Fine. So you could say it differently. God commanded you to bring a chagiga. Remember, if you go back to the Sugya and Kuftet, it's not just that you happen to bring a chagiga. Why do you bring a chagiga? Remember Rabbi Yehuda and Daf Kuftet? Because the only way of being Makayim Simchat Yom Tov is by eating Basar Chagiga. It's fine. You want to be more lumdish? It's not two factors working in tandem. It's that the very definition of Chagiga is I cannot be Makayim Simchat Yom Tov, according to Rabbi Yehuda, remember? Without bringing a Chagiga that I eat. There's just no way of doing it. So it's not just in tandem. It's that I need to eat this meat. Right? You like that better? Right? Meaning that, I didn't want to get too much into it, but you guys saw this again, Daf Kuftet. Right? Remember, Yehuda says that Bizman Beit HaMikdash, there's a mitzvah Simchat Yom Tov. Nowadays, there isn't. Why? Because the Iker mitzvah Simchat Yom Tov is eating Basar Chagiga, which tells you that it's not just that it happens to be today. It's that even though some karbanot might be defined as for God, the karban Chagiga, its very definition is that this is the only way I can become Simchat Yom Tov. Right? Good, I'm glad you like it. So that would explain why Chagiga, it's not just two factors. The two factors point to a very fundamental definition of Chagiga, is that Chagiga is about eating the Basar Chagiga. That's its definition, whereas Nedarim and Nedavot, you happen to eat.
Okay.
Right? You happen to be allowed to, but that's not why you bring it. You don't bring it so that you eat. Right? Where Chagiga, you do. Okay? You want that lumdish formulation? Great. It's a good formulation. I'm not saying it's a bad formulation. I think it's a good formulation. It's very lumdish. It might even be true, which is even better. It's lumdish and true. You know, that's like, that's the best combination. You know, Rav Yoel Ben-Nun used to joke about this. He's like, there's different types of different Torah. He's like, what I say is true, but not beautiful. What Rav Hirsch says, again, I'm quoting Rav Yoel, this is not me. What Rav Hirsch says is beautiful, but not true. What Rav Amital says is beautiful and true. That was his praise of Rav Amital, right? Sometimes things are beautiful, they're just not true, you know? I'm not saying this is Rav Hirsch. This is Rav Yoel's, like, vort. Because, like, Rav Hirsch is always beautiful, right? You read Rav Hirsch and you're always like, that's beautiful. And sometimes you're like, I mean, it's a nice vort. I mean, it's a beautiful vort. It's an amazing vort, but, you know. And then there are certain things that, like, everything they say, you're like, it's probably right. I mean, irrelevant, you know? I'm not irrelevant, just like, it's like philology, right? Sometimes people are like, this is true, and you'll be like, it's like the stuff Ephraim used to tell me. It's like, well, that's probably true, but thank you. I now know how to pronounce the letter exactly correctly. I mean, it's really important. It's not beautiful or edifying. It is correct. Thank you. Thank you. We are now deeply inspired. Yes. It's like entire... No, I told you, it was like when I was in Shir once with Roy Bleich, and Roy Bleich gave us an article to read, which was entitled Shuvot Machorei Masach HaBarzel, Responsa from Behind the Iron Curtain. And I'm like, oh, this sounds fascinating. And I open it up, and it's, if you're writing a get in this city, which is surrounded by these four Russian rivers... What is the proper spelling in the get of this 25-letter Russian river? How many ayins do you put in it? That was one child. And the other one was, in this city, there used to be four rivers, and one of them dried up. So do you still continue writing it? And I'm like, the title did not live up. You know, the article did not live up to the hype of that title, right? The article is very, it's very informational. It's very informational. It is not... spiritually edifying.
There exists a specific type of person who would just look at that and be like, this is the most...
Yes, or Ray Bleich. Ray Bleich loves it. Ray Bleich loves these things.
By the way, I love it when just random things use Yiddish spelling tradition.
Yes. Okay, so the Gemara then continues. So if you'll turn to Amud Bet, the Gemara brings now a second position, which is no, Avol Nidarim Unidavot Divrei Hakol Engraven Biyom Tov. Vahani Tanoi Kane Tanoi, the Tanin Mavin Toda Bechagamatzot, Necham Eich Shabab, Lobatzer Neshu Yom Tov, Avomevi Adam Toda Tov Bechagasuko. Right, so the Gemara continues. Again, with this position, Nidarim and Davot are not brought. The Gemara has other shittot, okay? I don't want to go through the whole sukkah. But again, what I wanted to point out from the sukkah is that sometimes the fact that it's brought for God makes it worse. Now again, the Gemara there, this is not the full discussion, right? The Gemara has other shittot about Nidarim and Davot. It's a very complicated sukkah. But you understand. The point is that sometimes, even though we saw that the Gemara in Yud Bet says that sometimes mitzvah makes it better, certain types of mitzvah don't. Right, certain times when you make it lagavoa, it makes it worse, because as the Gemara there continues, lachem v'lo lagavoa. Right, lachem v'lo lagavoa. Okay, so now, what's the problem? The problem is obviously you're going to tell me. What are you going to tell me? Right? I really should have put more of the Gemara in Beitza. This is the problem. So the Gemara, right? This Gemara, by the way, goes on for several blot. Right? It doesn't start today. It goes through Chaf Aleph. Goes on forever. Right? So the Gemara says, there the Gemara is trying to support Beit Shammai's limiting position. Right? And says, Amar le Beit Shammai lo kvar nemar lochem v'lo legavoa. Right, Beit Shammai explicitly says that his position is based on Lachem and not for God. Right? Not for God. And then Beis Hillel pushes back. Yeah, but we have a separate drasha of Lahashem. And then the Gemara even quotes a position that Nidarim and Nidavot craven b'Yom Tov. That you are allowed to bring Nidarim and Nidavot on Yom Tov. Now, what is that shita going to hold? That either the fact that you happen to bring, that there happens to be Ochel Nefesh is enough. Or alternatively, just like we argued lumdishly by Chagiga, that Chagiga is defined as for eating, maybe this Shita will hold that no, Nidarim and Nidavot, Shlomim, are actually defined as for eating. And again, this is a very fascinating sukkah. But I want to get full into it. The point is simply that the Gemara entertains the possibility, definitely Beit Shammai, and even at some level for Beit Hillel, that certain types of mitzvah make it worse. But now what are you going to ask me? So how do I know which mitzvah? Right? I don't understand. Right? The Gemara says on Daf Yud Bet that for mitzvah seems to be definitely mutter. And yet by kabbanah is somehow worse. Right? Why are kabbanah worse than carrying my lulav? Like, what is it that makes a lulav mutter because of mitoch and certain types of kabbanah are usher because of exir, akaduf, lachem, lalagava? Like, what is it that's going to define it? Now, we can't fully answer that question. We don't need to. What do we need to answer for our purposes? Good. We need to ask, not the general question, which could take us forever, which is, why are karbanot so different from regular mitzvot? The question we need to ask is, why is it that chametz might be in the category of things that are worse? Right? Correct. That's all we need to answer for this sugya, and that's all I want to answer. Because the other answer, again, takes us several blot of beitza, right? I can send you my shiurim when I taught beitza. I taught this for a very long time. And those who want it can go and listen. And maybe one day when you're learning beitza, you'll take me up on that offer.
Maybe.
Maybe, when you get to Masechet Beitza. So.
You talk about Masechet Beitza. Beitza alone. Is it your favorite, or is it just very, very relevant?
So, Masechet Beitza's nickname amongst the Rishonim was Masechet Yom Tov. So, when you're dealing with Yom Tov, Beitza is always going to come up. That's the answer. It's not like because I have... It's not because it's my favorite Masechet in the world. It's because... Not Beitza, but... I don't know. Maybe Sanhedrin, maybe Horeo. I like legal theory. You know, judicial theory. Anyways. Years ago, I got into a machloket with my chavrusas, not about what the favorite mezekla should be, but what my favorite mezekla was. It was very odd. Yes, it was a very odd machloket. I'm like, why are you arguing with me about my favorite mezekla? it was over this question, whether I like Sanhedrin or Hurriot better.
Which one do you like better?
I don't know.
I don't know the answer. Figure it out.
It was at that same Tikva-funded La Marais play trip, where this was the conversation we had at some point. Okay. Now, where would we get this notion that burning chametz is in this category, like we see by Lahasha? So here, look at the Gemara in number 5. The Gemara in Shabbat tells us, Ein madlikin b'shemen sreifa b'yom tov. You don't burn trumat tmeya. Remember, on Yom Tov. You also can't light with itron, with tar, because it smells. The chum say you can burn with any oil. I assume you all know this from Bama Madlikin. Good. Ritarfon says, no, you can only use olive oil. My time off. Mara says, why aren't you allowed to use shemen sreifa? So now the Gemara, in a very edifying answer, says, l'fish ain't surfing kachem yom tov, because you can't burn kachem on yom tov. Gemara says, thank you. I can't burn truma on yom tov, because I can't burn kachem on yom tov. Would you like to explain further than that? Gemara says, yes, we would. Minahani mili. Now I will actually give you a source and not just state it for you. Amar chizkiyah. Chaintana de bechizkiyah. Amr Kra, the Pasuk says, Lototiru mimenu ad boker, vanotan mimenu ad boker. You cannot leave a carbon over, and that which is left over until morning, right, you burn. So the Gemara says, why do you say Shintan lomar ad boker? How many times do you need to say ad boker? Right? But ma talmud lomar. So why is it saying ad boker again? Ba katuv litain lo boker sheni lisrefato. To tell you that the burning of the notar of carbon pesach takes place on the second morning, meaning on the first day of Chol HaMoed, and not on Yom Tov, right? Correct. That's how the Gemara says it. Now, you'll tell. I don't need you to weigh in on whether you like that drasha or you don't like that drasha. The point is, the Gemara now introduces, we have a pasuk which tells us that you are not allowed to burn notar on Yom Tov, which the Gemara then extrapolates from that you can't burn kachem on Yom Tov more generally, and then expands it yet further, which means you can't burn truma on Yom Tov, right? So just like we saw a certain limitation on karbonot, now we see that kachem, like burning kachem, is particularly problematic, right? It's in that category. Why? So before I look at that long toad's foot, because I know it looks intimidating. Does it look intimidating? 100%. Good. Okay, fine. But if you want to do the short ones first, look at Tosfot Minhag Peretz and the Tosfot Harash, right? And then we'll look at the long toad's foot that we have. They say, where do we get the idea that certain things that are for God are particularly problematic? What is the source, Mordechai, that certain things are, even if you might get benefit from them, are fundamentally removed from Ohel Nefesh, Karbanot? And why do they need to bring this up here? Because why is it a chiddush to say you're not allowed to burn Shemen Sreifa? Because when you burn Shum oil on Yom Tov, when you burn Shum oil, when a Kohen, who's our Kohen? No one's here is Kohen. No, you are. Gabe's going. Gabe, why in general are you allowed to burn Shum oil in general? I thought that was a huge cat. It was a little bit scary. Whoa. Okay. Fine. So, Gabe, in general, during the week, are you allowed to burn chamoil? Tummy chamoil? Yes. What are you allowed to do with it? Are you allowed to eat it? No. Are you allowed to get benefit from its light? Good. On Yom Tov, are you allowed to burn oil for light, regular oil? Sure. So, are you allowed to burn chamoil on Yom Tov for light? You would think so, and the answer is
no.
No. So now what do we have? Just like the Dharma and the Devil, we say, wait a second. So there's something here that I'm allowed to benefit from, right? I'm getting benefit out of it in such a way that it should be mutter from ochel nefesh, and yet we tell you, Gabe, you can't do it. Why? Oh, because certain things, when it's for God, it makes it worse, either because of Eitan's formulations, either the fact that it's for God defines it as something else, and the hana'ah is ancillary, right? Or the very fact that for God is like a, right, is an active osir, right? It actively forbids it. And that's why, not surprisingly, Tos Rabbeinu Peretz, a Mimvav, says, why is it that Gabe can't burn Shemen Sreifa, even though he's normally allowed to burn Shemen Sreifa? He's allowed to burn regular oil for light, so why can't he combine it and just use his Tamei Truma on Yom Tov for light? Answer, Tosfot says, Tos Rabbeinu Peretz says, Mide Dehave Anadarim Unadavot. Just like you can't bring Nedarim Unadavot. Sheyesh Ben Tzarech Hed Yod Ochle HaBasar. Does it have Ochel Nefesh in it? Yes, you're allowed to eat it. And nevertheless, Kagon Bishlamim, Vaasurim Mishum Emurim Lagabe, Emurim Lagabe Gavoa. But the very fact that you're bringing something Emurim for God redefines the whole act. Alma debatilate Tzarech Hed Yod Lagabe Gavoa. The human need is nullified. It doesn't count. Or as Eitan's first formulation, the fact that God is involved redefines the act. The fact that you happen to benefit from it becomes irrelevant because the act is defined as for God. Right? And that's why it's worse. Right? Because it's now it's for God and not for you. I, you're going to eat it, batel. Right? That doesn't count. It's true, but it's irrelevant to the definition of this act. The Rosh Mishans, Amen Vev also, V'chein nidar menudavot yesh men lagavo lachar shchita, aval truma temeya she'en lagavo menu klom, leka lemeymar, demashenena zocha b'sholchan gavoa. What's the problem? He doesn't buy this. Right? Right, he says it's different. Why? Because the carbon what? Right. The reason that it's usher is because it's considered that you're benefiting from Shulchan Gavoa. By Shemen Truma, is that true? It's not going to Gavoa. It's not going to Shamayim. Right? So it must be that it's a different usher. What's the usher? Just usher. Right? Correct, this is not called benefit, right? Or whatever it is. Tosvot, now if you look at the long Tosvot here in 6, says, V'im tomar, heichal finin truma mikachim. How can you learn truma from kachim? The kachim, dinu shein srifat andocha yom tov. I have a special pasuk that you're not allowed to burn kachim on yom tov. V'vishen yachal leona b'chat srifa. And there's a good reason for it, which is, are you allowed to benefit while you're burning notar from the notar that's burning? No. And therefore, mitoch doesn't apply. Right? You need some benefit. Right? But it's usher if there's no need at all. But now Tosfot says, but wait a second, Gabe, this can't be the same. Why can't it be the same? Because it's one thing to say that you can't burn kachim, because kachim you can't benefit while it's burning. But Shemen Sreif, are you normally allowed to benefit from it? You are! So, Sreifa Truma Tmeya Shemutir Leonet Bishat Sreifa, Lama Yeaser, why should the Aser? Maishna Mi Shemen Chulin Shemutir Lazorfo. How is this different than lighting a normal candle, Gabe? With Ladlikal Anato Dacher Truma Lafishish Mitzvah Bezivah the Migra Gara? What? Because a mitzvah is involved, it's worse? Isn't that our question? Answer, Omeriva Divada Gara. Yes. It is worse. It is definitely worse. No. Because the Torah forbade Gabe from benefiting from any benefit from the Shemen Sreifa except by burning it. Rak Hanat Sreifa. Im Kain, Havara Zu Ina Litzora Hana Ato. And therefore, even though you are benefiting from it, the burning is not defined as benefit. El L'shem Mitzrat Sreifa. The act is considered, even though there's benefit from it, what is it called? mitzvat sreifa. It's called burning. As Torah lo kpida she'anam en mishat biura. It happens to be you're allowed to benefit normally. But that's not the definition of the act. The act is defined as destruction. Meaning, because the mitzvah is to burn it, what does that do? That is mafkia. It removes your ability to look at it and say, this is called benefit. This is called ochel nefesh. It comes defined as an act of destruction, even if there's benefit coming from it. It is objective, right? Its halachic definition is destructive. Ulahachi lo dache yom tov. And that's why it doesn't push away yom tov. Midi dahavin edar min edavo, just like karbonot. Din kreven bi yom tov, l'man demar shulchan kavo kazachu. V'chein shtei alechem, l'didei, en efet en docha yom tov. Avo b'shish ben achil adam, even though l'nidar min edavo, and the shtei alechem, the bread, have eating. Mishum di karan l'tzarach avoa, because they are for God. Uliman darim craving the yom tov. Oh, so what about the shita who says you are allowed to bring in a darim and a davar on yom tov? Haini mishum di kasavar ikar shchita, right? Are they holding that it's mutter? Right? Now it's us to ask the question. Why would you allow bringing in a darim and a davar on yom tov? Two possibilities. Either you hold that ochel nevesh even requires ancillary benefit, even if it's not the definition of the act, or they think that, like we said, Chagiga, that Nidarim and Nidavar are defined as for people and not God. Right? Which sheet does Tosva take? The second. Look what he says. The Kesavar, the Iker Shechitat Mavidu Namelitzarach Adam. They define Nidarim and Nidavar as definitionally for people as well as God. But definite, meaning part of their very definition is for people. Aval sreifa truma tmeya, but burning truma tmeya, vaday l'shem mitzvah biur. It is for biur. V'lo l'shem hanah, and it's not for benefit. Hilkach asur b'yom tov kishar kachim. Uluri nira, and the re says, d'lo shayach v'sev truma l'mer shilchon kavoa kazachu. He says, you can't call burning truma that you're benefiting from God's table. V'lo damal l'shtei alechem. It's not like shtei alechem shafiyah l'tzarech kavoa, and the baking is for God. Because then you have to wave. Right? He's saying, no, it's worse. Why? Or, no, but it's still usher. Maybe because there's no heter of Hashem. It's not even Hashem. Right? It's just a mitzvah of destruction. I'm not sure. And he says, "V'lekel meimar b'mishulchan gavol kazach." V'hachim v'farish ri lefishen servim b'yom tov kachim b'yom tov peirish gazu truma tu kachim. So truma maybe is a gzera of kachim. V'imtam or ma'iriyat tu kachim. Mishum shein servim kachim b'yom tov nigzam mishum truma shlo letzorech. Maybe make a gzera of truma shlo letzorech that feels servim kachim b'yom tov at yatsiv locha lota say truma shlo letzorech and servim mashim tov reish Rashi b'samach deinase b'seifadam rabbanan. He says, Avi, Yishlomer, the Shreifa Truma lo Litzarach lo Shreif. He says, you can't just say that it's Aser, that it's a Gzera of Truma Litzarach, Atur Shlo Litzarach, because most of the time Gabe does need the oil. And therefore, if it's Aser, it must be Aser for formal reasons that we compare it to Kachem. But what do you learn? Whichever exact formulation you take from this, what do you learn from this, from these Tosfotim? Right? What do you learn from this Sugya? That certain things, there's a mitzvah, and what do they seem to say? Correct. And good. But right, so now you'll tell, so now we'll say, okay, it's hard to tell exactly which mitzvah are mutter and which are not. But what this sugya points out is it's a very particular type of thing for God, and that is, right, the Shreifat Kachrim tells me that when God says destroy it, right, destroy it. Exactly. Now, even when you're allowed to benefit from it, the act becomes defined as destruction. And that is usur, even if there are ochel nevesh components. So now if we come back to our sugya.
So rereading it over the comments, then you have machlokes about whether or not like, burning comments is for more practical reasons or more practical reasons.
Exactly. So now you come to our sugya, but now we have another fork. Because now what would you say? Listen, if you hold like the chachamim, that all you need to do is get rid of chametz. So maybe if I burn it, it's mutter. Why? Because I don't really have to destroy it. Right? I can get rid of it. If I happen to destroy it, so that's fine.
Well, you're not getting
But if I need to burn it and destroy it, and it's an act of shreifa, so just like by kachim and by truma, we say that once there's an act, you must burn it, even though it's a mitzvah. That the fact that there's a mitzvah to burn it redefines the whole act and removes it fundamentally from the possibility of being defined as ochel nefesh. And if you hold like Rabbi Yehuda, is that what chametz is? 100%. So now you understand how the Gemara could say, now coming back to our sugya, that how could it be that according, why does the Gemara say that according to Rabbi Akiva, if he holds like Rabbi Yehuda, that you must burn chametz, that we don't invoke mitoch here? So we saw several possibilities. Either he holds like Beit Shammai, doesn't hold the mitoch at all, right? Or he holds a mitoch, but this isn't Sorach Hayom. But now we have another possibility, which is there are certain types of mitzvot which require destruction, where the fact that there's a mitzvah to destroy it totally redefines the act and eviscerates any possibility of applying the heter of ochel nefesh, just like nedarim and nedava, just like sreifat kachim, just like sreifat truma. And if that's the case, it could be what the Gemara is saying, not that we don't hold the mitoch, but that if you hold like Rabbi Yehuda, that you must burn chametz, then that redefines this act as an anti-ochel nefesh. Right? An act that by definition can never be called ochel nefesh, and therefore is asur on Yom Tov. But that presumably would only work according to Yehuda, who requires it to be burned, because it's that chiyuv to burn it, right, that defines this whole act as sreifa for destruction, rather as sreifa for ochel nefesh. Whereas for the chachamim, that's much less obvious, because there isn't that same chiyuv.
Yeah, but you could still take the split.
Well, that's what we're going to see tomorrow, and again, this is what leads us to tomorrow, which is, okay, this is within Rabbi Kiva, which the Gemara limits to Rabbi Yehuda. But on Amud Beh, but on Vav Amud Aleph, the Gemara is dealing with the question of what happens. Lemaisa, forget Rabbi Kiva. Take the sheet that we hold of, Chachamim Beit Hillel, right? You would think that by the end of it, once you throw Chachamim into the mix, and once you call Rabbi Yehuda, right, Beit Hillel into the mix, it should be allowed to burn Chametz, and yet, we'll see tomorrow, the Gemara says, no, you can't. And that's why all the Rishonim say, what? What have we been doing all day? I don't understand. What are we doing the last 3 days? Why is the Gemara making a huge deal of what we can derive only from Rabbi Akiva, if we also poskim you don't burn chametz, once we jettison all the other positions? That is a very good question. That's what we can deal with tomorrow. That's why I decided to switch around the order and not wait a week for you to wake up and say, wait, there was another part to the sugya? Yes, there is another part to the sugya. It's a different sugya. Okay, good. Now, I want you to look for a minute at the Avni Miluim, because the Avni Miluim is really the one who deals with this most extensively, like the overarching theoretical issues, okay? So the Avni Miluim, also known as... So the Avni Miluim is his Peirush on Evin Ezer. He also wrote a more famous Peirush on Choshen Mishpat, known as the Ketzois. Right? What is his name? Who wrote the Ktzai Sachaishan? Who wrote the Ktzai Sachaishan? Who writes the Ktzai Sachaishan? Reb Arya Leib Heller. Right? Reb Arya Leib Heller. 1745 to 1812. What? 1745. Where? He was born in Kalish? Kalush, I'm not really sure. Which is currently in Ukraine. And he moved to Stiri? Sitri? Not really sure how to pronounce it. Sitri? I don't know. S-T-R-Y-I?
Where?
Anyways, so the Avni Miluim has a tshuva simin bet where he goes through this and he says she'ila bimkomot shemochrei basar heim nachrim, in a place where the meat sellers are non-Jews umochrim basar kasher lamulim larim, but they sell kosher meat im shochten len biyom tov keva and detzorach yisrael nami hu olo, are you allowed to shecht for these non-Jews or these non-Jewish meat sellers who sell to Jews and non-Jews, or does the fact that you're selling it to this non-Jew make it not ochel nefesh, right? That's his question. Okay? So, he quotes the Shev Yaakov, who says it's usser. Okay? To save time, I want you to skip to the paragraph where I bolded things. Got it? Yes? He says, right, he notes that the Nodi Yehuda was Mekil. Why was the Nodi Yehuda Mekil? The Nodi Yehuda was Mekil because I'm shechting, I'm giving it to the meat sellers, and that's the only way that realistically it's going to get into the hands of the Jews that these meat sellers sell to. So I'm also shechting for non-Jews. Who care? Why am I doing it? I'm shechting for the Jews. Correct? The Avni Miluim says, I don't buy it. You know why I don't buy it? He says, well, fi'ani adaiti nirit. Nirin de Shev Yaakov. I think the Shev Yaakov is right. Umashi calls it no de Yehuda mitam nerem mishum datam ikar shkita b'shil gavoha. He said the no de Yehuda distinguishes, and he says by karbono, it's usher. Why? Because the shkita is defined as for God, right? But you'll say that in this case, it's not defined as for God. I mean, for the non-Jews, right? He said God is different because when you do something for God, that overpowers the need of the Israel. So Nozi Yehuda says, look, when I bring it for God, so then you could say that the fact that Jews are also benefiting is irrelevant. But non-Jews can't do that, right? Doesn't that make it Israel? He says, He said, no, look at Tosfot. Tosfot we just saw in Shabbat Chav Dalet. Shelo kidvarav el kedat bal shev Yaakov decheva andu shel gavo aser lishchot because it's for gavoa it is aser. Vishen yochal and b'shat shreif avlor midok shehotra el shreif etrumat tmei shemud lan b'shat shreif alam yaser v'amri va divadei gora. It's worse. Kaven shaser torah kol anot rakanot shreifa. Right. What does the Riva say? That no, the Torah specifically forbade this. Right? Yes? So now skip down and he says, Perakama dipsachem. So now he says, what's the issue by us? What's the issue? Now he's the first one who says, okay, now how do we tie this into chametz? So he gives two possibilities. One day in Tosfot is kevin mitchil avar and yachol lahenot mimena. One is merely a time issue, which is that are you allowed to burn chametz and then benefit from the ashes first day in Tosfot? Yes. But what do you need to do first? Get that fire started. Only once the fire has been going for a while and the chametz starts to be destroyed, then you can get hanah, which means that the first minute when you light that flame, you can't. And therefore that moment is not ochel nefesh. Right? But the alternative is what? In his last paragraph, he says maybe the other reason is, no, it's ikar. Right? There's two reasons why chametz might be bad. One is simply just like karbanot. That, just like doing something for God can redefine it as for God and not for you. So doing it for chametz can redefine it as destruction, not for you, as we've been saying. The second possibility, he says, is purely a time issue. Is that maybe chametz isn't that powerful. Right? Maybe chametz isn't that powerful. But because you're not allowed to benefit from it at the beginning and only later, it simply lacks ochel nefesh. And that is the two dead. But what you see in the Avni Miluim is that he explicitly says that the key to understanding our sugya is the karbana. Or is this idea that doing things for God actively make it worse. And as the Avni Miluim explains later on the tshuva, because it may create a new isser, I mean, that is the problem. And that is also the position of the Chassam Sofer. If you look in 9, just in what I bolded, the lo med tinu heter afilo rakev ochel nevesh tekef achar afiyata. The ochel nevesh is only mutter when it's immediately after the baking, but when it's not, when there's a time delay, which is what would happen by chametz, then it will be usher. Okay, so just to review what we saw, is that today we opened up the final possibility, right, which is the reason that it is usur, despite the principle of ochel nefesh, and despite Beit Hillel's principle of mitov, the reason that if you hold like Rabbi Yehuda, it is going to be usher to destroy chametz, burn chametz on Pesach, is because we have seen that in certain cases, doing something for God makes it worse, specifically when it redefines and wipes away the ochel nefesh, as we saw by Nedarim and Nedavo. And in the context of burning kachim, when what God wants you to do is destroy, that act becomes defined as an act of destruction and therefore impervious to being defined as ochel nefesh, because ochel nefesh is by definition a certain productive act. And therefore, even though it's true that by truma, let's say, Gabe is allowed under normal circumstances to benefit, in fact, he's supposed to, from burning his truma oil, he's supposed to, he's a Kohen. If he has tamei truma oil, he's supposed to burn it and benefit from the light. Nevertheless, that is not considered hana'a, because it's still an act of destruction. It's an act of destruction with a heter hana'a, but it's an act of destruction, right? And therefore, the majority of you, in the Avni Miluim, right, and the Re, and the Rebbeinu Peretz, is that what all this teaches you, that a destructive act is removed from Ochel Nefesh. The mitzvah makes it worse in such a circumstance. Oh, and the Avni Miluim points out is that this very easily explains the sugya by Chametz, because by Chametz, if you hold like Rabbi Yehuda that it must be burnt, must be destroyed, then the act is defined as an act of destruction, not Ochel Nefesh. And this uniquely, therefore, will not have the rule of Mitov. There is also the technical issue that even if you would say, okay, so forget the act of destruction, I'm allowed to benefit from it, right? Because once it's burnt, I'm allowed to benefit from it, possibly, right? So then you would say, no, either it's a problem because still it's not defined as an act of benefit, or the other sheet in Tosu, which is taken by the Chasam Sofer, is the time delay, right? Is maybe, yes, you could benefit from it once it starts burning, but when you're burning it, that first moment, all you're doing is destroying it. And that's what I wanted to show you, right? Is that it could be that the reason that this is different is because the active chiyuv to destroy it, right, removes it actively from being able to be defined as ochel nefesh. And therefore, this isn't a normal application of the rule of mitoch. It's not Beit Shammai. It's simply a derivative of Yehuda's position. That once I say that you must burn it, that redefines the whole act in light of that destruction, that the reality of destruction. Okay, and like I said, what we're going to do tomorrow is, all this lamdas is great, except the Gemara quite explicitly made this lamdas depend on Rabbi Kiva, who himself depends on Rabbi Yehuda, and according to Tosvot, depends not just on Rabbi Yehuda, but on Beit Shammai. But we neither paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, and we definitely don't paskin like Beit Shammai, and therefore, if I'd asked you, once you eliminate Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Yehuda, and Beit Shammai from the equation, and you find Chametz on Pesach, what should you do? You would all have said, burn it! And the Gemara says, no, don't burn it. Cover it. And that's why tomorrow what we're going to do is, so why did we just seem to have ignored all the conclusions that we just read in our sugya, which is that our sugya is limited to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Kiva? Why is it that us normal people who paskin like the Chachamim and Beit Hillel, we also don't burn it on Pesach? That's the question that we still need to deal with. Once we do that, we will come back to Hamad Bet and go back over the Gemara we already read about Bal Yerav Bali Matzeh and finish up some loose, right, tie up some loose ends about Bal Yerav Bali Matzeh. And then we have a few more Sugyan Davav that are worth doing. They're all worth doing, but that we'll actually cover, and we'll move on from there. Okay?